Hello, and welcome to This Week at Charlestown Road, a branch of the Heaven Bound podcast. My name is Jason Harden. I'm here with Roger Schaus, and this is where we reflect on the weekend that was. We dig a little deeper into a recent sermon to give you something to think about as this week unfolds, but also preview what's to come this next weekend at Charlestown Road.
Good to be with you today. Jason had the honor of preaching this past Sunday. He had a great lesson that parallels what's going on in the world today, but it really gave us a good insight into the life of Jesus. His lesson, which is on our website, is entitled Keys to a Successful Campaign. Not a political sermon whatsoever, but what he looked at is if you were running a campaign today, if you're running for mayor, governor, or president, there's certain key things that you would have to have and do to become successful. You would want to maximize your image. You want to look good before the people. You want to assemble powerful supporters. You need money. You would want to offer instant rewards. You got to pull the votes in. And then you never, ever appear to be weak or vulnerable. You strengthen up yourself. And, you know, as you think about the candidates running today for office, you see all of that. But when we look in our Bibles and we look at Jesus, Jesus was the opposite of all four of those points. His image was not about beauty. His image was not about how people saw him on the outside. He oftentimes offended people who had money. And case in point, the rich young ruler, he went away sad because Jesus didn't tell him what he wanted to hear. He didn't offer instant rewards. It wasn't about the people, but it was about God and the kingdom. And he appeared to be weak and vulnerable, especially to his opponents. They accused him of all kinds of things. And so what's interesting when you look at that, you put that together, you think if Jesus was running for office today, he would fail. And when we look at this, we think, how in the world could Jesus run a kingdom? How in the world could he try to get his message worldwide when it seems like he was doing all the wrong steps from the very beginning?
I used those basic relatable things that we can understand in 2020 to really try and illustrate the truth in John chapter 18. In fact, if I remember correctly, I think I said in both services, if you get nothing else out of that sermon, here's what I want you to get. Do you remember how in John chapter 18, Jesus stands before Pilate? And all of this is confusing to Pilate the way that it would be confusing to many people even today. But Jesus takes that opportunity to tell Pilate in John 18 verse 36, "My kingdom is not of this world." Roger, we get ourselves as disciples of Jesus in trouble if we forget, number one, Jesus is king, he's got a kingdom, but his kingdom is not of this world.
And sometimes one of the mistakes people make today is try to bring business practices into the church. Church is not a corporation. The church is not a business. So let's just kind of kick around some questions that came out of that lesson for me. And right from that John 18 passage, how is the kingdom of Christ different from kingdom of the world? There he stood before Pilate and says, "My kingdom is not of this world." Pilate was part of that big Roman system. So how was the kingdom of Jesus different from the kingdom of Rome, let's say?
I think the first thing, you can stay right there in John chapter 18, and Jesus says, if my servants were a part of a physical kingdom, if I was aiming to defend physical territory and establish a physical throne, my servants would be fighting. But from the very beginning, Jesus taught in a variety of different ways, citizens of his kingdom do not wage war according to the flesh. We went back and listened to Paul in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, where he just makes that abundantly clear. We're not picking up physical swords or in modern times, physical guns or bombs or anything. That's not this kind of a warfare. We are in a war for souls. We realize as those who have listened to God and his revelation that shows us what reality really is. Souls are what is in the balance. And so we are waging war, according to Paul in Ephesians chapter 6, against spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places, which means when we start fighting each other as fellow human beings, when we treat each other as the enemy, we're well on our way to losing. That's not this warfare.
And you know, we don't refer to this country as a kingdom. We use the word nation. But we compare what Jesus says to America or this nation. A person who's born in this country, they are a citizen of this country, whether they want to be or not. In Jesus' kingdom, it comes by choice. A person has to decide to follow Jesus, become obedient to the laws of Christ. And so it doesn't come about naturally. One's not just born into the kingdom just because he happened to live in the right place. Our nation is limited in time. There was a time when there was no United States of America. There will be a time probably down the road when there won't be again. Our nation is limited by geography. We got oceans on the east and the west, and that limits how far our nation goes. Kingdom of Christ is worldwide. Kingdom of Christ is not limited by time. Kingdom of Christ is not even stopped by death. And that's why Jesus, when he told Peter, upon this rock I'll build my church, and the gates of Hades shall not overcome it or overpower it. So we see it's different. It is a spiritual nation based upon choice of following Christ.
It's not founded on the United States Constitution or on some political party's platform. It's built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets. Jesus is the cornerstone. It is a timeless foundation that anyone, regardless of when or where we live, we can build on that perfect foundation.
Back to your lesson, you know, so we look at a modern campaign manager today, and he wants his candidate to win. So he's pushing all these things like image and saying the right things and appealing to the people. And when we study the scriptures, we see that Jesus didn't do it. How did the kingdom of Christ become worldwide without a PR man, without the idea of success and of the idea of having people pass out literature and phone calls and emails and all the things like that? But the kingdom of Christ is everywhere today. How did that happen?
That is really the story of the fifth book of the New Testament, right? The Acts of the Apostles. You can just take a tour beginning in Acts chapter 1, where Jesus told his apostles, you're going to be my witnesses in Jerusalem and in all Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the world. And so they begin serving as those witnesses in Acts chapter 2. And we're told by Luke in verse 41, those who received this word were baptized. And suddenly now we read about thousands of people being added to this number. By the time we reach Acts chapter 4, the number is up to about 5,000. There are multitudes of both men and women who are being added to the Lord. By the time we reach Acts 5, verse 28, we've got the powers that be who are saying to Peter and John, you have filled Jerusalem with your teaching. In Acts chapter 6 and Acts chapter 7, we read about it just increasing and multiplying. We get to Acts 13 and we read about the word of the Lord spreading throughout the whole region. By the time we get later into Acts, we read about various churches all over the known world being strengthened in the faith, increasing in numbers daily. Now, your question, of course, is a valid one, and one that a whole lot of ink and discussion has been spilled over for centuries. But one of the beautiful things that you find in the book of Acts is it's person to person sharing the good news. This was before the age of the printing press, of course, before the age of the internet, but it was life changing good news. It was the word of the Lord. And when people were willing to submit themselves to it, not only did they come in contact with this good news, but wherever they went, they shared it. And people have been doing that now for 2,000 years.
And I think, you know, another expression from the book of Acts is that they turned the world upside down.
Yeah.
In the book of Colossians, in the first chapter, two different places, it said that the word had gone into the whole world. Already before the New Testament was even finished, the gospel had gone everywhere. And I think two of the powerful points that come out of that is, first of all, it was powerful preaching.
Yeah.
They emphasized Jesus. It wasn't themselves. They preached Jesus. They preached resurrection. They preached the future. They preached heaven, hell, those serious topics that need to be preached. But secondly, with that was pure lives. These people have changed from immorality to being righteous people. Book of Thessalonians talk about how these people left idols to follow the one true living God. And so that same concept works today. You know, in a lot of church circles today, the idea of having a strategy and a marketing team, and they're going back to business practices to try to get the word out there. We need to just follow what happened in the first century world. We need powerful preaching, and we need pure lives. And those are the things that really make a difference.
And we need to use the tools that we have. Can you imagine what a Barnabas would say about having a podcast feed or the ability to video something and send it around the world? We have absolutely no excuse not to share this same powerful message and to live the pure lives that would make that message appear to be compelling, right? We have incredible tools. We're using the same message. And I believe with all of my heart, these apostles would look at us and say, let's get to work.
Absolutely. And those pure lies, seen at work, seen at home, that's what's going to be noticed. Changing your attitude, changing your language, all those things make a difference. Well, another question that came to my mind, and those that know me know I'm a huge, huge Beatle fan. And back in the 1960s, the Beatles came under all kinds of criticism for this comment. John Lennon made a statement that the Beatles were more popular than Jesus. And there was mass burnings of the Beatle records, and the quote, I think, was misunderstood. What he was saying is that they were filling arenas everywhere they went. People were screaming their heads off everywhere they went. We look in our Bibles, and we know it's places like Luke chapter 12, where it says there were so many thousands of people that they were stepping on each other. Jesus fed 4,000. Jesus fed 5,000. But within 3 years, by the time we get to the cross, Jesus seems to be almost alone. His disciples have almost disbanded. There's a few bystanders, you know, off in the distance. What happened? He was so popular, but everything seemed to change.
We've spent a lot of time within the context of our church family here, I think, talking about that dynamic. As we have focused this year on seeing clearly, Roger, early on in the year, you talked about the power of miracles to help us see, right? And the place that Jesus's miracles played, the role they played in his ministry. They validated why people should listen to this ordinary looking son of a carpenter from Nazareth, right? People were amazed at these miracles and immediately started thinking about, well, I've got an aunt, or I've got a brother or a sister or a mother who could desperately use healing, and so I'm going to bring him or her to Jesus. In John chapter 6, you read about Jesus feeding miraculously thousands upon thousands of people. But one of the things we've tried to emphasize this year, if we're going to see as God sees, we need to understand the point of those miracles, right? The point was never to just have some sort of a magic sideshow and build a crowd and fill arenas and amphitheaters all over the ancient world just so people could come and marvel at the wonders of Jesus. those miracles were signs that were pointing to the message. And Jesus consistently would use those miracles to validate, this is why you need to listen to me, but here's the message that I have to share. And I think really what we get in the Gospels is a glimpse at unchanging human nature. There are many religious organizations today that will draw crowds by appealing to the flesh, by personal wants and needs and desires. What Jesus did was to seek to win people and hold people with a message. And when he would turn people's attention to the message, oftentimes they would decide, well, if there isn't something in this immediately for me, we talked about instant rewards a little while ago, then I'm not really interested in the message, and I'm definitely not interested in submitting myself to someone who's going to call me consistently to self-denial.
And that message was intended to change the listener. I've been to a circus before. The difference between a miracle and a circus is you go to a circus, you see a show, you go home, and it was a cool show, but nothing changes.
Yeah.
The message of Jesus was to change you from the inside out. And as is today, people don't want to change.
It's the difference between being a spectator and a participant.
That's right? It, exactly. And some people are just happy where they're at. My life is good, and I don't want to change, not realizing that they're not right with God and they're not heaven-bound. And so Jesus became unpopular because he started emphasizing the message that people needed to hear to repent and be right with God. And sadly, that same message is unpopular today. Now you can draw a big crowd in church buildings today if you just offer cotton candy and hot dogs and put on a great show and everyone leaves, no one's changed, or just be nice, preach Mr. Rogers' neighborhood stuff, everyone's happy. But you start preaching about sin, you start talking about what God says about divorce, you talk about righteousness, you talk about holiness, purity, and pretty soon people are going to say, well, you know what, I don't like that message. And that back then and that today makes people walk away from Jesus.
We've spent a good amount of time on Fridays here recently talking about the Sermon on the Mount. It is all over the Sermon on the Mount, right? That was not a cotton candy, just easy believism sort of message. That is the very heart where Jesus said, I need you to enter by the narrow gate. And travel this hard way, but it is the way that leads to life. It is really a question of, what am I looking for? Am I looking for a circus performer who will give me everything that I want right now? Or am I looking for a Savior and the true and rightful King who will show me life the way it was meant to be and ultimately provide life eternal?
And another classic passage is Luke 14, where Jesus lays out the characteristics of discipleship. You don't hate father and mother more than me, you cannot be my disciple. You do not put me first, you cannot be my disciple. So the message of Jesus was not about getting crowds. It was about getting right with God, and that's what we see. Well, one final question as we think about this lesson, great lesson. I really encourage you to go listen to this if you haven't already, is just the upside down thinking in all this. I mean, how you and I would, if we were just had a blank piece of paper and we were given the job of, okay, map out a strategy of taking this message into all the world, what you and I would come up with was exactly not what Jesus did. It was just upside down. And many things that Jesus did, many things the Bible talks about, are really upside down to our common thinking. God's thinking is not the same way as our thinking. What would be some examples of that?
Yeah. The very introduction to the Sermon on the Mount is a good place to start. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are the merciful, especially to have the audacity to say, blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake. This would make people scratch their heads. It continues to make people scratch their heads. I've been teaching, whereas you, Roger, a couple of months ago did a class on what the miracles help us see. I've been teaching a Sunday class for adults on what the parables of Jesus help us see. And so many of those show us the upside down nature of the kingdom of heaven, and they challenge us that maybe we don't see as clearly reality the way that we would like to think that we do.
And I think a classic example is everyone's favorite, and that's the prodigal son. I mean, in that audience, as people first heard that parable, they probably booed. They probably shook their head. The very idea that a Jewish boy would tell his dad, give me my inheritance. Basically what he's saying is, Dad, I wish you were dead. Give me my money now. Then he wastes it. Then he works for a Gentile pig farmer. I mean, the people in the crowd would just been shaking their head. And then when he comes home, the father goes out and celebrates his return. How they thought, this is a terrible, terrible story. And then when the elder brother refuses to have anything to do with it, the people in the audience would have thought, that's what this is about. That's the hero of the story. And Jesus flips it around. And he shows them that you are so unlike your Father in heaven. You're not like what God is. And so upside down, inside out to the way we think.
There are a whole lot of people who would never, 2,000 years ago, have put two words together, good Samaritan. But Jesus did that, right? On a variety of occasions, he would knock the legs out from under his audience, not to be mean, not to just be provocative for the sake of being provocative, but to get people to open their eyes. You know, at the very beginning of his ministry, he stands up in that hometown synagogue. He reads centuries-old words from Isaiah, I have come to open eyes.
And even something basic as choosing the apostles.
Yeah.
There was no B team. There was no JV. I mean, if these 12 bombed, that was it. And then the nature of them. I mean, you got a tax collector in Matthew, and you got Simon, who's a zealot. And they were just on the opposite poles of everything political. You got fishermen. Fishermen who spent their time in a boat, not standing before crowds preaching. And yet these are the people that's going to go into all the world and preach the gospel. Again, you and I, if we were writing this on a piece of paper, we'd say, no. We need to get some public speakers. We need to get some professional men. And upside down. But one of the greatest upside down things is what God expects of you and I. What would be some things there, Jason?
Yeah, I mean, I the first thing that immediately comes to mind is Jesus calling all in Luke chapter 9, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. Jesus has this amazing way, maybe a pesky way in the minds of some, showing us that the way up is down.
Seek first the kingdom of God. Don't seek yourself. Don't promote yourself. Seek first the kingdom of God. Whoever wants to gain his life has to lose his life. I mean, so many paradoxes, so many contrasts, opposite thinking to our self-driven, it's all about me times that we live in. And so just a great way of looking at things. And one of the things it does, it makes me realize that I've got to read the Bible as it is. I cannot approach the Bible thinking, okay, this is going to be run like a business. This is going to be run like a campaign. This is how we do it. It's not how we do it. I've got to follow the Lord's way. And guess what? The Lord's way has worked from the very beginning.
Yeah. His kingdom is not of this world, but his kingdom continues to stand and will stand as long and beyond the standing of this world. I appreciate you helping me revisit that. And as you mentioned, it's freely available along with so many other resources at charlestownroad.org. Just a brief note about what's coming tonight before, Roger, we get a preview from you for this Sunday. Remember that tonight, Wednesday, September 2nd, we are kicking off a five-part Wednesday evening series, Troubles Without and Fears Within. Tonight, we're going to talk about the fact that some things change, Some things never change, but please remember, listen carefully if you're a member of our church family or we're thinking about visiting with us tonight, no in-person assembly. This is purely live streamed. CharlestownRoad.org on Facebook Live, YouTube Live, 7 o'clock tonight. Some things change. Some things never change. We hope that you'll join us in that study. But we also want to give a preview for this weekend. What do you have on tap, Roger?
And we remember this Sunday we're having two services at 9:30 and 11 o'clock. Still need to check in via our website as we do that. And I'll be preaching both times. And we're going to be talking about the wise man, the foolish man who built their houses from Matthew chapter 7. We're going to talk about the Rock of Ages. And just kind of explore that simple passage, but look at some things I think are relevant to our times today. Love to have you if you can come.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us today, for listening to This Week at Charlestown Road. Maybe there was something there that you think would be helpful to someone else. We would love to have you help us share these efforts. We want to give people something substantial to think about in the middle of the week. But we're also already looking forward to Sunday, the best day of the week, and we would love to have you come and grow with us.